Well, I thought we'd go and see some PMs. Here next door we have Ravi Krishnaswamy. Wave for the cameraman.
Hold on.
Get your name.
Hey. Ravi's one of our Indian team members.
Yep.
And he just moved his pin on the map. He moved it from Chennai to, where are you actually from, Ravi?
Coimbatore.
From where, sorry?
Coimbatore, it's a South Indian city.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's like, it's not as big as Chennai, but, you know.
And what do you own in terms of API system?
I own System IO, the development of System IO, System Diagnostics, the namespaces mainly, and bits and pieces of design area there.
And how long have you been on the team?
I used to be in this team right from the early start, from 98, and then I left this team and went to Compact Frameworks, and I was there for 3 years or so, and then I'm back since summer of this year.
This is the place to be.
Oh, yeah. Center of the universe.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Yep, cool.
Thanks a lot.
See you guys.
Well, here next door, it sounds like a pretty civil heated discussion, so let's pop in on these guys. How's it going, guys?
Hey. Good.
Hey, we know this guy.
Yeah?
That's right.
Yeah.
You've been on Channel 9 before.
That's right.
Been there, yeah.
How's it going? Brad Abrams, an old friend, and Joe Duffy, who's a new PM program manager on the base classes team.
Yep.
I'm sure you've heard Brad's history before, probably.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been on the team forever, so.
Excellent. Joe, you want to give a bit of a quick history of what you've worked on and how long you've been on the team?
Yes, sure. So I joined the team in June, approximately. And I joined the team to work on WinFX, so that's Avalon and Indigo.
Yeah, you responded to a blog entry of mine, right?
That's right. I found out about the job opportunity on Brad's blog and quickly responded, and everything got set in motion from there. I've also since then picked up responsibility for the threading APIs in WIPI and some miscellaneous design guideline-oriented things, basically best practices for building APIs. And in particular, I've been working on the dispose and finally design guidelines.
That's what we were discussing when you came in. Okay.
Yes.
How do we solve a particular problem around that? Joe's been on that.
Well, let's get a bit of an insight into what the BCL does in solving these problems. Do you want to draw up the problem and present it so we can hear about it?
Yes, and actually, conveniently, the problem is already troubled.
Oh, wow, that's remarkable.
This is like Julia Child kind
of. Julia Child. Insert argument.
Yeah, pulled out of the oven. All completed.
So the problem we're running into is we have a longstanding guideline that we have thankfully abided by, which is a good thing. The bad thing is that the C++ team is doing a lot of great work in the new compiler that they're shipping with WIDB. To do such things as deterministic finalization, making sure that resources get cleaned up and things like that. It turns out that a pattern that we have instituted is preventing them from doing that. Basically, this is the example here. So our guideline says if you're implementing iDisposable, you should do an explicit interface implementation of that when you have alternate means to close a file handle, close a stream, things like that. What this does, actually, the C# compiler translates this into a private method. The problem there is that a subclass can't actually access that method because it's private. It's not protected. Turns out our guideline conveniently provides a way for subclasses to call dispose using this override here, which has a bool parameter, boolean. But this isn't part of the interface. So what the C++ compiler is trying to do is, say you subclass this class A here, they want to actually go ahead and do automatically dispose and actually call base plus any other things that they may need to do. This isn't possible because this is private. So there are a number of solutions to the problem. One would obviously be to change this so it's not private any longer, but that isn't the pattern that we have today. so we're actually investigating that possible solution. Another possible solution would be for this to detect the presence of a dispose that takes a bool parameter and just call that number of downsides to that, namely that this isn't part of an interface, so it's kind of funny that the C++ compiler would be recognizing a named method and automatically calling it. The last solution would be if the C-sharp compiler didn't emit an explicit interface implementation as a private method, but instead did that as a family or protected method, in which case it would be accessible through the base class. So it's kind of an open-ended issue right now. We don't have a solution. We're actively working on it.
And what do you want to do, Jeff? What do you think we should do?
So this is, it gets almost into a philosophical discussion. We're working with Herb Sutter, an architect on the C++ team, on this particular issue. We have a meeting this afternoon to discuss this, but
We'll give the nice audience a preview of that and how that meeting's going to go.
Okay. So the meeting.
Do you want the audience's help? Because they'll put up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please tell us. Tell us whether we're crazy.
Yes.
You are crazy. We all know that.
Okay. So if I have my way, the meeting will go as follows. We will. I mean, it is kind of strange. So this method is actually callable by a client. You know, if they say A equals new. Okay, forgive the bad class names here. They can't actually call dispose on this because it's private, right? So they have to first cast this reference to call the dispose method, which typically isn't a problem because these classes actually have closed methods or alternate means to actually dispose of the resources. So I think, first of all, it's a bit funny that you have to cast this in order to access the dispose method. So I prefer
that's just the way explicit
right.
C-sharp explicit interfaces work that way.
Right. So first, I think we should be making these methods public. Anything that exposes a dispose method should scream out, say, I need to be disposed of, I need to be cleaned up when you're done using me. Unfortunately, that goes against the grain of the existing pattern, so we would have to change the pattern and potentially change a lot of already implemented classes.
There's some popular ones like stream, for example, has a closed method on it, and now it would have, but it has its closed implements on disposable, but you only ever see closed, and so it's kind of obvious to developers what to do. If we make this change and have a closed and a dispose, then the developers are left to wonder, well, if it's closed, do something different than dispose? What does dispose do? Which one should I call?
Herb actually
so how would you answer that question?
How would we answer the question? Well, if I could just pop out of the Visual Studio box and answer it every time, it would be fine. But I would say, look, they do identical things. Call either one. Close is there for convenience. But the problem is I'm not there, and developers will kind of make up a story. That's what we do all day long. We kind of take a logical series of things and make up a story. And I think they'll make up some difference. I've heard, if I could, somebody mentioned yesterday, oh, dispose must delete the file on disk. And close must just close it. So that's just not the case. So I think fixing this problem for C++ will have the effect of having a downside for C# and VB users.
Right. So one of the arguments is dispose, while the implementation does the same thing as close, is kind of conceptually something different. Close is, and this is where we start to disagree, but so close says to me, this file is currently open, close it explicitly. This is the precise operation I want to perform. Whereas dispose means I don't know, I really don't care whether it's open, I don't know the state of the object, I just want to get rid of it. I'm done with it, dispose of it. And it's a subtle difference, and I'm not sure that, you know, developers would pick up on that nor appreciate it. So,
well, I mean, one, well, close closes the stream, dispose destroys the object.
Right.
I mean, that's, we're not, you know what I mean? Destroys.
But, I mean, the problem is destroying the object. The garbage collector destroys the object, so dispose doesn't.
Right.
Have,
so that's the whole problem.
So there's also, we didn't talk about those, the finalizer involved in this whole shindig as well. So. And then, of course, my other problem is, like, we have, what, 3-4 years of history with the current pattern, which says close and dispose are identical. So even if it were better, which I'm not sure I'm willing to admit yet or not, to have to have dispose and close mean different things, even if it were better, is it better enough to get over the prior art we already have in the framework and the expectation we build up for developers? So,
interestingly, we do have some situations where you can close and dispose art different, where you can open something, close it, reopen, close again, and then you still have to dispose of it at the end of the object's life cycle. So
yeah,
we have a precedent there a little bit, too.
Yep, yep.
I love it.
Yep. So anyway, that's our debate right now.
Yeah.
So if you have comments, chime in. Let us help us fix this problem.
I'm sure you'll probably blog about this today, right?
Joe and I have been talking about how to get a blog out on this. So if we can come up with a way to describe the problem well enough to get some feedback, we absolutely will. So
sounds good. Excellent.
Enjoy your tour.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Well, now I thought we'd go
back
the other way. We randomly put our gear out in the hall to trip people up.
Yeah.
And I thought we'd go right next door. That was my office there a second ago. We're going to go out here and see Lakshan Fernando.
Hello.
Hey there, Lakshan.
Hi.
Lakshan is a tester on the Base Glass Libraries team.
Hey. Hello.
He hails from Sri Lanka. Yeah. And how long have you been on the team now, Lakshan?
I've been in this team forever. I enjoy this this place and around 5.5 years now.
So you're one of the longest standing members?
Next to Brad.
Right. Excellent. And tell us a little bit about the test role. What's involved in being a tester for the Base Glass Libraries?
Right. So basically, we primarily take an API-based testing approach, and we make sure that we shadow the feature areas that the devs and the PMs do, and then sign off on a particular feature.
Okay. So basically, the life cycle is a standard life cycle. We work as a team, primarily driven by the PMs at the design stage to get the specification. Devs go away and develop, and then you guys come along and test it later based on the specification and what the actual code looks like in the end of the day.
Yes. And one thing I like in this team is the fact that the all three disciplines are involved in the whole process. So basically, we get to go to the design meetings and then give our input on the design and then talk on the implementation and then get feedback on the test plans that we have.
Sounds
basically
good.
Sign off on that.
Sounds good. Fantastic. So there's other things the test team works on as well, of course, such as tools to make our process better, etc., and samples and scenario-based testing. We're going to show us something that we could have a look at today?
Sure. So,
could you switch your monitor to 60 hertz, though, too?
Okay.
If you're going to show me. Hold on a second while I do that. So we got our refresh rate fixed.
Sure. So, as I said, we primarily focus on API-based testing. But, of course, sometimes our customers run into issues that aren't easily discovered through APIs. So when we finished our work in Beta 1, the whole CLR test team took part in a sort of scenario building exercise to flush out design issues and the bugs and also sort of to use the cool features that we added in WIDB. So as part of this effort, my group developed an application to showcase the tracing that we added in WIDB.
Okay.
So basically, tracing allows an application to be monitored. And there are two states in tracing that you can switch on and off. And if you switch tracing on and in an application, basically you can set levels to it like critical, error, information, and things like that.
So and these are things happening in your application?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there are trace listeners out there listening, which basically gets these trace messages and gets into the format that they are used to do. So, for instance, an XML writer trace listener can listen to the traces and then write it in an XML file. Similar for delimited list trace listener or event log trace listener, things like that. So what this application is doing is it allows a trace file to be loaded and then quickly drill down to a problem area. So basically, you can go in here and say file open, and then this will show three types of trace listeners, the XML writer trace listener, the delimited one, and the default one. So I've set it out to read a XML one, basically.
So this file that you're opening now, Arshan, this is a file that was previously made by an application as it did its tracing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a test data one, but of course any application can do that. And these traces get loaded to this data grid view. And basically these controls that are on top of the data grid view allow filtering to be done. So imagine that a user is interested in looking at error messages, and we filter down only to the error ones. And then after that, if the user is only interested in looking at event IDs that are like 6 and 8, then we again filter down to this level. But this application also allows another degree of filtering, and that allows the customer to go and actually programmatically set the filtering itself. So they can go and then basically say, hey, if the event ID is equal to 6, then I want to see those. Others I don't want to see.
And 6 is an error?
Yeah, it's that particular one, and this allows a great deal. And we use code down here, and if, say, for instance, they don't, they make compilation mistakes, we show that. And basically, now you see 6. And another feature that we like with this application is basically using this application, users can monitor live tracing. So imagine that other application that's giving tracing is still running. This actually goes and picks up and then filters to the level that this that the user has set it to be. This has a lot more features. So
That's showcasing some of the new would-be features. So did we have the ability to filter before in V1.0?
Not to this degree of this filtering. We almost replaced our tracing with this new model. And this application actually showcases it, and okay. It's a very convenient tool that goes with our new ones.
We didn't have any of the listener-based support either.
No.
In place.
Okay. We added a new, lots of new listeners here.
That's great. Is this tool available publicly, Dr.?
Yes. We think that this is interesting enough so that we're going to we're planning to make it available with the resource kit SDK.
Okay. The resource kit being the CLR resource kit?
Yes.
Okay. It's something that I don't know if people are aware of yet, but we're going to be building a resource kit for delivery around about the time that Beta 2 ships.
So excellent.
It'll just have a lot of these kinds of things on it, and blog entries and facts, etc.
That's outstanding.
Great. Thanks, Lakshya.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Much appreciated. Appreciate it.
You too.
So let's head right next door to Lakshya's manager. Here we have Vinay.
Hey.
Vinay is the test team lead for the base class libraries. And he also hails from India, from Chennai as well, same mm-hmm. place that Ravi was from.
Yep.
And how long have you been on the team here, Vinay?
In CLR, almost 4 years, and in Microstar for 7+ years.
Okay. Where were you before the CLR?
The frameworks team in WinForms.
Okay. So you've always been working on managed code?
Yeah. I worked in VJ++ first. I started in VJ++, then I moved to Visual Basic 7, and then I moved to the CLR.
And you're the test lead for the base classes. What's mm-hmm. your confidence level that we're going to be able to sign off on the dates we've got coming up?
I think we're doing pretty good with beta 2 automation. We're almost done right now. We're focusing on a few things like serialization, side-by-side testing, of course, security testing. I think, yeah, we are there. The product looks very solid, and, yeah. We can ship it, in sometime early next year.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. How many testers are there on the BCM?
We have like 5+ me. Me counted like half a tester or something.
You count as half. You're half a tester.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I spend 50% of the other time with managing people. One-on-ones and other things.
Okay. Is that pretty standard? So the dev lead would be the same?
Yeah, I think so. Usually they count like 0.1% of the lead time for every person working for you. If it's 10 people, then you are fully manager. So you don't have time to work on other things.
Okay.
So now when you do the security reviews, do you pass your code base off to like a security penetration team that doesn't work on the BCL, so you have basically in-house hackers hacking away?
that how it works?
We are not doing that right now. Actually, in V1.0 timeframe, we did something similar to what you're saying. Okay. But for this push that we are currently working
for
on,
beta 2,
we are not doing anything like that. What we are doing is, as a feature team, we are trying to identify what are the areas we think it's vulnerable for security, and then we are basically brainstorming, okay, what can be the issues, and then we're going and trying to address that.
What's one of the good things about the BCL is that we get a lot of incidental testing. Because we're at the very, very lowest level, when a lot of other teams look at our APIs and give us advice and tips, etc., on, well, you know, have you done this right, have you done that right? We also do have a security team that works on their own set of APIs, but also looks around for security problems, and there's a person who's responsible for making sure, Jeff Cooperstein, that the platform is secure.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So, Vinay, were you going to show us any tools that we've been working on lately in the test team?
Yeah, sure. Basically, we are working in managed core, like me and my team, for quite a long time, like a few years. We recently thought, like maybe last 1 year, 2 years, why can't we build tools and tools that we can basically give it to internal customers or external customers. They can also leverage our expertise, our experience. Basically, recently we shipped like 3 different tools in MSDN to help out the code dump users. Basically, one tool is we basically took our existing testbed and then we wrapped it because we cleaned it a little bit and then we enhanced it a bit and then we provided a standalone test suite for externals. Now, if someone is writing like a code dump provider, custom code dump provider, they can run our test suite to see whether their custom code provider works or not, those kind of things. And then the second one that we really recently shipped is the subset code provider. What that is basically does is it will verify whether a particular code tree that built is a subset conformance or not. And then we shipped one more tool in MSDN recently. That's a IL code provider. There are like plenty of people writing custom code providers in the real world. And then we are shipping some code providers with the product, but most of the providers that we are talking about, it generates the language code like Python or C Sharp or VB. We don't have one that directly targets IL. We created one that basically targets IL itself. This basically works as two different ways. One is users can see now, okay, there's an IL code provider, they can generate IL code directly. The other use is if someone wants to write a custom code provider, they can see how we have written IL code provider. We are shipping the source code with the tool. They can look into it, they can write their own code provider. And then we are writing some tools that basically internal tools also to help out internal customers because we're in the low bottom of the stack and everybody uses our components. We released a collections test suite. What that basically does is like we have all these collections in our framework and other people write custom collections on top of our collections. We give our test suite to them. Now they can basically call into our test suite by simply calling like 2-3 lines code. They can leverage our testing that we have done in our team. And then we are building one other tool basically that's called API CodeGen. That helps people who write managed code testing. And basically, maybe I can show you a demo of that tool
sure.
if you guys are interested.
Oh, yeah. Is that your daughter, by the way?
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's my daughter.
We've been staring at her in the background, which is very cute.
Basically, this is the API CodeGen tool. We released a beta version recently, at least 5 or 6 different teams within Microsoft are using this tool. What this tool gives is, it's a really cool tool. It basically, once you select an API that you really want to test, it basically gives a test case. It's in whatever language you're really interested in. You can select a language also, what language you're interested in. In this case, we have only VBC Sharp, but you can select other languages. We support all the languages that CodeDump supports.
And these are for APIs that you create also.
And this is the APIs that in any library, if you take like MS Code Lib, there is so many APIs. You want to test something like string.something.
Okay.
You can create a test case using this tool without writing any code manually.
Okay.
I'll show you, like for example.
So this would work for any managed API.
Yeah. For example, let's go to a simple API, like a string class, and then basically what I'm going to do is select like a very simple API, something like toUpperClass. That's a method in the string class. Mm-hmm. Now what you're seeing here is basically the instance of the string, because you are testing an instance method in the string class. Mm-hmm. Now we actually automatically generate some values using some library that we built. Now you can also, what you can do is, I think it's coming here. You can go here and you can change the properties. Like if you want a different length, you can say, okay, I want a different length string, like 10 characters. You want like Japanese strings, you can say, I want a wow. Japanese string. And you don't want a string, you want like a file name or something. I think it's coming too. You can basically say that also, like I need a number inside the string and those kind of things. But, to show you how it works, you can basically, this is the method we are testing, and this is everything here is a scenario that we are going to test. Now you can say, okay, generate code. It generates code in the language that you selected, for example, C# here. It basically sets like this variable here, and then the result value is because we are not setting anything, and then the string that we are going to test is work 2. And then we are calling the API, that's a toUpper API, and we are catching the exception, we are verifying the results, we do everything by default. Then basically you can run also from here, you can see now, okay, it failed, because we are saying the expected value is null in this case. But you can go and say for this one here, you can say, okay, my expected value is that. Then if you run it here, I think there is a space. If you run it this guy here, now it should say pass. Okay. You can use this tool to do two things. One is manual testing, or you can basically generate code for any language that you really like. And you can take this test case and you can hook up to your test runners, and then you have the test, boom, you can run it forever for the next 10 years or whatever it is.
Great. Very cool. Is that going to be publicly available?
Yeah, we should. Actually, this is not going to be publicly available outside Microsoft. This is where building internal Microsoft tool. There's lots of pushback from different teams saying that, can you add this feature or that feature? What we are hearing is lots of interest from several internal customers, because this reduces maybe testers. This increases testers' productivity a lot. They can quickly write test cases. And this supports like even complex types, like any type you can test with. And also we support lots of cool features. Great. Like you can see core coverage from here. You can basically create a bug template. You can generate a bug from here for the product studio. You can integrate the test case into test harness. If you have like something to run every day, you can say, okay, integrate my test into the generated test. It does lots of cool things.
Great.
You
gotta get a lot of email asking for this.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And also, yeah, we are constantly.
This will be good. We push it now to ship this, but like, it'll be good.
Excellent. So if you want it, leave a message on Channel 9.
That's really good. <you go. laughs>
And we are leveraging this work with WTT, the Windows framework, and also we are basically working with other teams in Microsoft to take our generators, integrate with them. They can also utilize our stuff.
I mean, that's a good point about internal tools going live, going to the public. I mean, when you send something out to the public, you also sort of have a contract that you're going to support it. If you have a tool written by two or three guys, chances are you're not going to be able to support.
It's just in case people are wondering, why wouldn't you release such a tool? We have lots of really cool internal tools, but they're internal for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also we are constantly working to improve our process tools and stuff like that. The heavy focus right now is also to see how we can leverage that effort with our customers. It may be internal or external, but anyone using it, it will be more useful.
Fantastic. Than
we
just
good. Cool.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.